14 years later, after the Battle of Raphia in 203 BC, when Ptolemy V is now 7 years old, Antiochus III attacks Egypt again, and this time with the support of the apostate Jews. He also recovers Asia Minor and his kingdom all the way back to the Indus River. Now, the apostate Jews are the robbers of the people found in the prophecy. Their actions allow for Greek customs to infiltrate Jewish life. Now, in the move towards Egypt, Antiochus III entrenches his entire army in Sidon. Three famous Egyptian generals attempt to take him there in Sidon, but they fail. The arms of the south cannot withstand the north, as the prophecy states. The Jews have welcomed Antiochus III into the Promised Land, and his eyes are on Egypt. But Egypt has appealed to Rome, and by this time, Rome has already defeated Hannibal in the Second Punic War. Rome has also taken Macedonia and Greece away from the northern kingdom of Syria. Faced with Roman interference, which will soon arrive on their ships, Antiochus III backs off and he attempts a diplomatic solution. He proposes that his daughter child, Cleopatra of Syria, be married to the child king, Ptolemy V of Egypt. Now, Ptolemy V is only 7 at this time. Antiochus III promises a huge dowry, so the marriage is held in Raphia. But the dowry never arrives. Antiochus III expects Cleopatra I to betray her husband. But Cleopatra loves her boy husband. Antiochus III's plans are failed again. Antiochus III assembles a fleet of 300 ships to attack the coastland of Asia Minor and Greece. A Roman envoy tries to reason with Antiochus III, but he does not want to negotiate. The Romans attack him at the pass of Thermopylae and defeats him and expels him from Greece. He is also defeated near Smyrna in 190 BC, and he is forced to renounce all claims in Europe. A few months later, he tries to plunder a temple of Zeus in eastern Asia Minor, and he is killed. He stumbles and falls, and he is no more, just as the prophecy foretells. Antiochus III is followed by his oldest son, Seleucus IV, in 187 BC. He inherits an enormous yearly tax burden demanded by Rome, so he spends most of his 12 years reigning, trying to raise money to pay that tax. In 181 BC, Ptolemy V dies, and his 6-year-old son, Ptolemy VI, begins to co-reign with his mother, Cleopatra. Late in his reign, Seleucus IV sends a treasurer to Jerusalem, called in Daniel's prophecy the glory of the kingdom, to raise money to pay the taxes to the Romans. The treasurer tries to plunder the riches of the temple, but he does not enter into the temple. He is supernaturally stopped. The treasurer returns to Seleucus IV in 175 BC and poisons him. Thus he died neither in anger or in battle. The treasurer seizes the throne for himself. Ptolemy VI of Egypt disputes the claim to the throne, and he claims it for himself. He claims that Syria should be part of the Egyptian Empire, the Empire of the South, because Antiochus III was the brother of his mother, Cleopatra. That does not matter, because Seleucus IV's younger brother, Antiochus IV, also called Antiochus Epiphanes, claims the throne back from the treasurer in 175 BC. Antiochus IV is vile. And as the prophecy says, the honor of the kingdom is not his. You see, it really belongs to his brother, Demetrius I, who is in Rome, and that is exactly where Antiochus IV wants to keep him. Through flattery, Antiochus IV takes the throne peacefully, using friends in Pergama to keep Demetrius I in Rome in prison. Soon after taking the throne in 175 BC, Antiochus IV's nephew, Ptolemy VI of the South makes a futile effort to recover the land that was lost of Egypt to Syria, but he fails. Antiochus IV murders the prince of the covenant, Onias III, the Jewish high priest. His brother, Jason, is next in line for the position, but Menelaus obtains the high priest office by paying a huge bribe to Antiochus IV. Antiochus gives him the position of high priest in the temple. The 2,300-day prophecy of Daniel begins on that day. Antiochus IV has made a treaty with the rulers in Pergamum, and they help keep Demetrius I in Rome so Antiochus IV can capture the throne. He breaks that treaty for a stronger one with Rome later on. With his army, he enters Egypt and he makes it all the way up the Nile River to the city of Memphis, distributing gifts as he goes. His plan is to peacefully take over four of the major cities in Egypt, which also includes Alexandria and Memphis. But in the prophecy, he can only go so far. He cannot capture Alexandria. Antiochus IV assembles a large army and marches on Ptolemy VI. And in the first battle, Ptolemy VI is defeated. Antiochus wins the next battle also. Then he marches on to Memphis and proclaims himself the ruler of Egypt. Now, Ptolemy VI's advisors have advised him wrongly. They are secretly on the side of Antiochus IV, yet they are serving in Ptolemy's council. Many of the people in Egypt have transferred their loyalty from Ptolemy VI to his brother Ptolemy VIII, who successfully stops Antiochus IV from taking Alexandria. Antiochus IV returns to Memphis, where he sits at a table with his nephew Ptolemy VI. He pretends to be Ptolemy's friend, and he calls him the king of Egypt. Ptolemy VI pretends to go along with the banter of Antiochus IV. They lie to each other, just as Daniel has foretold. As soon as Antiochus IV leaves the table, Ptolemy VI appeals to his brother Ptolemy VIII, and they begin a co-rule of forces in Egypt. As Antiochus IV journeys home, he hears rumors in Palestine that says he is dead and that the Jews are rejoicing. Jason, the rightful high priest, has gathered 1,000 mercenaries and he marches to Jerusalem, capturing the city. Antiochus IV takes this as a revolt and determines to teach the Jews a lesson. He attacks Jerusalem and he kills 40,000 inhabitants. He sells another 40,000 into slavery and he plunders the temple, carrying off its treasuries. Jason flees. Menelaus, who had bought the high priesthood from Antiochus IV, is still in the position as high priest. He sacrifices for Antiochus IV a pig on the bronze altar, and then they make a broth with that pig, and they spread that broth and sprinkle it all over the temple, defiling the temple. Antiochus IV then returns to capture Egypt in a second campaign, and after the second campaign, Egypt hires help from Greek mercenaries, and they ask for help from Rome. In 168 BC, Antiochus IV attacks Egypt again, ordering the surrender of Cyprus and other areas that belonged to Egypt. No one can stand up to Antiochus IV, just as the prophecy foretells. Memphis falls to Antiochus IV, but at Alexandria, the Roman ships of Chittim are anchored in the harbor. 4 miles from Alexandria, Antiochus IV is handed an ultimatum to leave the friends of the Romans alone. Antiochus IV tries to use his flattery to get away, saying, "Give me a few days to think about this," but the commander draws a circle around him in the dirt and says to him, "Before you step out of this circle, you give your answer." Antiochus IV says, "If it pleases the Senate, we must depart. Antiochus IV leaves Egypt. For all practical purposes, the belly of bronze has now bowed to the waist and thigh of iron. The four-headed leopard has, for all practical purposes, seceded to the great beast, even though both of the kingdoms will continue for a while. In revenge, Antiochus IV returns to Jerusalem, and he attacks on a Sabbath day. He takes over the temple and the town buildings and the massive walls, and he uses them to protect the Syrian troops. He decrees a universal religion, and all must obey a universal law. He stops Jewish sacrifices. He destroys the scriptures. He changes the feast. He builds an altar to Zeus. He erects an Asherah pole, the sex symbol of the Canaanite worship. If you disobey Antiochus IV, you will be killed. He dedicates the temple to Jupiter Olympius and to himself, and he orders that he is to be worshipped as God. Antiochus IV has gone too far. God's remnant is found in Mattathias and his sons. They are the wise men of the prophecy who know God's word, and they make attempts to make things right in the midst of all the persecution. Mattathias is a priest in a little town called Modin, and he is approached by one of Antiochus IV's officials, who instructs Mattathias to offer a sacrifice to Zeus. Mattathias not only refuses to offer the sacrifice, but he kills the official. When Antiochus IV hears about it, he sends officials to enforce the decree, and a skirmish occurs and the officials are killed. Mattathias and his son Judas Maccabeus lead a group of religious rebels, and they cut deep into the troops of Antiochus IV. When Mattathias dies, Judas Maccabeus takes over. Many join Judas in the fight, and the Maccabeans become a major force in Israel. Antiochus IV repeatedly attacks the Jews on the Sabbath, knowing that they will not fight on that day. Jews are roasted. Jews are strangled. Jews are crucified. Jews are sold into slavery. Jews are robbed, and Jews are cut into pieces. 6 years after Antiochus IV placed Menelaus in the position of high priest in Jerusalem, Judas Maccabeus and his men march on the city. They oust Antiochus IV, reclaiming the city, repairing, cleansing, and finally rededicating the temple on the 2,300th day since Antiochus IV placed Menelaus in charge, and they defile the temple in 164 BC. They add this day to their calendar as a feast day, and they call it the Feast of Dedication. Antiochus IV dies of a disease in 163 BC, and his 9-year-old son takes the throne, ruling for only part of 2 years. With Antiochus IV's death in 163 BC, Daniel 11's prophecy jumps to the end times in verse 36. We will pick up with that part of the story when we get to the end times. Antiochus IV was the little horn that grew off the long horn of the four horns of the goat in Daniel chapter 8. That prophecy is also fulfilled down to chapter 8, verse 14, where it jumps ahead to the end times also. But the histories of the kings of the north and south of Syria and of Egypt still continue, even though the prophecies of Daniel fail to cover them in detail. They are marching day by day to fulfill Nebuchadnezzar's dream that Daniel interpreted of the statue with a head of gold. The northern kingdom of Syria has been feeling the oncoming threat of Rome for many years. Finally, in 83 BC, Antiochus VIII takes the Syrian throne, but his kingdom is just a minute portion of the original empire. In 64 BC, Pompey has Antiochus VIII killed, and the Syrian kingdom is no longer. It is in the hands of the Romans. The southern kingdom continues to be ruled by the Ptolemies and their queens, most of them named either Bernice or Cleopatra, until we see the life of Queen Cleopatra VII. Cleopatra VII is the Cleopatra that most of us have heard about. When Cleopatra VII's husband, Ptolemy XIII, dies on January the 13th of 47 BC, she has a formal marriage to her brother, Ptolemy XIV. But that's all it is, just a formal marriage, because she becomes the mistress of General Julius Caesar, who is now in control of Rome. She's his mistress at the same time that she is queen of Egypt. She gives Julius Caesar a son, and she names him Caesarion. When Julius Caesar is murdered in 44 BC, she falls in love with Mark Antony, giving him twins, a girl and a boy, and later she gives him another son also. In 44 BC, when Julius Caesar is assassinated, Octavius starts taking the lead in the Roman Empire. When he finally has complete control, he changes his name to Augustus. We know him as Augustus Caesar, the Caesar who made the decree that all the world should be taxed. It is also this same Augustus Caesar who places Herod the Great as the king of Judea in 37 BC. When Mark Antony loses at the Battle of Actium against Octavius, Antony commits suicide. Cleopatra, not wanting to fall into the hands of Octavius, allows a snake to bite her on August the 12th of 30 BC, and she dies. The four-headed leopard of Daniel's vision has succeeded to the beast. The belly of bronze of Nebuchadnezzar's dream has moved down to the waist and thighs of iron. In just 24 more years, in 6 BC, the Lord will once again send an audible message to his people. It has been 398 years since anyone has heard an audible word from the Lord. That audible word in 6 BC will be to a priest. His name is Zechariah. His wife's name is Elizabeth. They are way advanced in years of age. But that voice from an angel will tell Zechariah that he is going to have a son. And that son will be the forerunner of the Messiah. And Zechariah is to name him John the Baptist.